Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, I've been talking about the Blue Mountains bushfires, and I've been at pains to go over this in fine detail, as I often have to do on this show, to counteract some really pathetic, virulent propaganda which was spread by agents of the climate change globalist lobby, the Climate Council, previously the Climate Commission, now a privately funded body, still trying to stir up trouble, trying to rally support against the government, which is now following a mandate to repeal the carbon tax because the people of Australia do not want a carbon tax. And goodness me, how convenient it was to have these bushfires just in the lead up to the new sitting of Parliament to now have as a further ammunition for why the government is so terrible and why they're going to bring about calamity and catastrophe for Australia and the planet. And we had the UN climate chief weighing in there, and we have the Climate Council weighing in, talking about this report that they're writing, which says that climate has an influence on bushfires. You know, and of course there's an influence. Everything is influenced by everything else. I wouldn't dispute that. But the really key point to understand from what Will Steffen was saying is that he's lying to you. He's just lying. You know, in a very clever, smooth way, this man in a suit with grey tinted hair, who looks like the archetype of the sort of person you could trust, is lying to you in the most egregious way. Now, the bushfire that started in the Blue Mountains near Lithgow started on October 16. And guess what, folks? There was not a high fire risk for that day. There was no fire ban for that day. Yes, it had been a warm winter. Yes, it was a warm day. But completely contrary to what the man said in the previous segment that I played, completely contrary to that, this was not a high fire risk day. And that's central to the claims that are being made by the climate scientists. Now, why did the fire occur? Well, the story came out on the 23rd of October that I have here from the Sydney Morning Herald. Army explosives training started fire. And I also have another article from The Australian. Huge fire sparked by defence exercise, says New South Wales Rural Fire Service. Okay, just reading to you now from the Sydney Morning Herald article, which actually was sourced from the Australian Associated Press. The Rural Fire Service said an investigation had found that a training exercise from the Department of Defence was responsible for the blaze that started on October the 16th. The investigation has concluded the fire started as a result of exploding ordnances on the range on Wednesday, an RFS spokesman said. Now, at that time, the Defence Department did not confirm whether this was indeed the case, but I've got a more recent article published in The Australian titled Defence Says Sorry for Starting Massive Bushfire, and this is from the 24th of October, 2013. A defence chief has apologised over a massive bushfire in New South Wales that destroyed homes after being sparked during a military training exercise west of Sydney. The state mine bushfire continued to rage at an emergency level between Lithgow and the Blue Mountains today. That was more than a week ago, and this was after it began during explosives training on army land. Acting Chief of Defence Air Marshal Mark Binskin says a small fire that started during a routine training exercise at Marangaroo on October 16 was responsible for the blaze, which has burnt out nearly 50,000 hectares of land. I do apologise, because it has been identified that this fire was the start of the fire. Now, it says here, Air Marshal Biskin says the decision to go ahead with the training exercise was made on a day of light winds and 23 degree temperatures. Let me say it again, 23 degree temperatures. Does that sound like global warming to you? 23 degrees, folks. That's how hot it was. Hello, Will Steffen. Are you there? You know, I'd really love to have a chat with you right now, Will. I'd like to actually read this to you and get you to comment on the fact that it was only 23 degrees. Okay, the fires occurred, not in dispute. The fires were terrible, not in dispute. Were the fires caused by unusually high temperature? No, they were not. The fire danger was on the lower end of the scale and there was no fire ban, he said. I mean, folks, how can they get away with pitching this as a climate change issue? 23 degrees. I mean, that's cool. That's like when you got the air conditioning on. That's cooler than the air conditioning. I usually have my air conditioning set at about 25. 23 degrees can even be a little chilly. You know, if you're in the shade and there's a wind blowing. 23 degrees is not hot. How many different ways do I have to say it? You've been lied to. The man with the beard and the suit and the grey tinted hair, standing there in the courtyard of a government institution, looking you in the eye, was telling you one giant, colossal furphy. And if I do get a chance, I will confront the man on it. And I would like to publicly humiliate this man. What these people are doing is unforgivable, folks. They've committed crimes. We do need to see justice. Okay, I'm going to turn now to our next subject for the day, which is Russell Brand and the Socialist Redistribution of Wealth program, which the comedian has now really gone on the very, very strong path of promoting. And I have to say, until yesterday, I was a very big supporter of Russell Brand. I thought he was great. I mean, I really had nothing negative to say about Russell Brand, but then I hadn't really listened to his views in detail. It wasn't until I watched the interview with Paxman from the BBC that I realised what this guy is actually on about. And it's like, wow, you know, he's actually pushing the hardcore old school paradigm of wealth redistribution a la Stalin, a la Mao, a la Pol Pot. He's an extremist. And I believe that he's not really a comedian. He is amusing. But to me, he's not really a comedian. To me, he really is on a political platform. And of course, the interview that I'm going to play to you now, and I'm going to give you some commentary on, is largely about him now editing a magazine. But this guy is something of a demagogue. And the ideas he's pushing are really the flotsam and jetsam of the 21st century. The idea that we take from the rich and we give to the poor, you know, it appeals on an emotional level. But in practice, it's a disaster. In practice, it's totalitarianism. You create you try to create an inversion of society. You have to empower some authority to enforce this redistribution. That then simply becomes another expression of the same tyranny that you've already seen. And Russell Brand, you should be smart enough to know that. So let me play to you some clips here from the interview with Jeremy Paxman from the BBC, and I'm going to just give you my take on it. And again, you know, initially, in fact, the first time I watched this, I was on Brand's side, and I thought, isn't it great he's challenging the BBC? Because, as everyone knows, I don't like the BBC. I think the BBC is a deceitful, manipulative, propagandistic organization. And so I see someone like Russell Brand come on, looking like a hippie, and taking them on. I want to be on his side. But then I notice there's something funny going on. It's like the BBC is giving him a platform. And I'm thinking, whoa, what's going on? It's like they're giving him a platform. Yeah, they're attacking him, but he's coming off looking better. But what's he promoting? Well, he's promoting something that I deeply disagree with. But I'm supposed to like him anyway. Why? Because he's a hippie comedian. There's something wrong here. Something wrong with this picture, folks. So let me just play to you now a little from the interview here, and I will interrupt it to give you some opinions of my own.
Russell Brand, who are you to edit a political magazine?
Well, I just suppose like a person who's being politely asked by an attractive woman. I don't know what the typical criteria is. I don't know many people that edit political magazines. Boris, he used to do one, didn't he? So I'm a person with crazy hair, quite a good sense of humour. Don't know much about politics. I'm ideal.
But is it true you don't even vote?
Now, let me just pause it there. Now, initially, when I watched that, I thought, yeah, isn't it cool? He's being cool. But really, why is he editing a political magazine? One, why is he trivialising it to such a degree as if it doesn't matter and that he doesn't know anything or isn't qualified for a joke? Like, I don't get it. Like, that's actually not really funny. It doesn't work for me. It's not actually communicating something valid for me in any way. It's not funny, and it's not truthful either. It doesn't feel truthful to me. I'll continue now.
Yeah, no, I don't vote.
Well, how do you have any authority to talk about politics then?
Well, I don't get my authority from this pre-existing paradigm, which is quite narrow and only serves a few people. I look elsewhere for alternatives that might be of service to humanity. Alternate means alternate political systems.
They being?
Well, I've not invented it yet, Jeremy. I had to do a magazine last week. I've had a lot on my plate. But here's the thing that it shouldn't do. Shouldn't destroy the planet. Shouldn't create massive economic disparity. Shouldn't ignore the needs of the people. The burden of proof.
We're going to break. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. I'll be right back. I'm going through some analysis here of Russell Brand and the BBC. Do stay with us. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. And I'm playing here an interview with Russell Brand on the BBC, and we just got to the point where he's being asked, you know, what is your political platform? And initially he sort of says, oh, I don't have any. He's like, you know, as if it's all a joke. But then he comes back with three points, and he says, shouldn't destroy the planet, shouldn't create massive economic disparity, and shouldn't ignore the needs of the people. Now, of course, those are very Those are very emotional kind of button-pushing things to say. Destroy the planet. Well, okay, let me just focus on destroy the planet first. I'm not sure whether Russell Brand is an environmentalist or whether he's into the climate change carbon tax business. I don't know. The idea that we're destroying the planet is a furphy. Okay, you can't destroy the planet. Okay, the planet's fine. We're certainly messing up with our own habitat. We're doing a lot of things which are bad for us and bad for other living things. But we're not destroying the planet. So that, sorry, you don't get a tick from me there, Russell. I don't agree with that. And I think it's just an emotional trigger that is actually aimed at greenies and, you know, environmental people, people with a big heart who love Mother Earth, you know. But it's woolly, it's irrational, it's fluffy. Now, this business about creating economic disparity, he says you shouldn't create economic disparity. Again, it's emotional language. It's like you shouldn't be bad. You shouldn't do something which is going to be bad. You shouldn't hurt people. It's very childlike and emotional, and there's really not a lot I can actually engage with in it. Of course, I wouldn't agree with creating economic disparity either. But it's just too simplistic. There's just nothing in there. I can't say, yeah, you know, I'm with you there. But I know a lot of people on an emotional level will go, yeah, because they feel like, yeah, he's appealing to them. He's appealing to something that's not intellectual, that's sub-intellect. And I feel that's actually quite dangerous because he is taking the position as an orator. He's going to be editing a political magazine. But he's using these very crude, simplistic little talking points. And, you know, shouldn't, for the third one, shouldn't ignore the needs of the people. Well, of course not. But then again, that also implies a belief in the nanny state, doesn't it? It believes that it's a belief that the state is there to kind of meet your needs. Now, of course, many people do think that, but he is adopting the position of invoking the nanny state. And I feel it's in a childlike way. It's like it's appealing to the child in you. Oh, yes, the nanny state, the parent state, isn't meeting my needs. They should be meeting my needs. Why is Russell Brand appealing to people on this very childlike, primitive level? That's just something that I ask you to consider as we continue through this interview.
The burden of proof is on the people with the power, not people like doing a magazine.
How do you imagine that people get power?
Well, I imagine there are sort of hierarchical systems that have been preserved through
they
generations.
Get power by being voted in.
Well, you
that's
say that, Jeremy, but
you can't even be asked to vote.
It's quite a narrow, prescriptive parameter that changes within the
in a democracy, that's how it works.
Well, I don't think it's working very well, Jeremy, given that the planet is being destroyed, given that there is economic disparity of a huge degree. What are you saying? There's no alternative.
No, I'm
just
not saying
system.
That. I'm saying if you can't be asked to vote, why should we be asked to listen to your political point of view?
You don't have to listen to my political point of view, but it's not that I'm not voting out of apathy. I'm not voting out of absolute indifference and weariness and exhaustion from the lies, treachery, deceit of the political class that has been going on for generations now, and which has now reached fever pitch, where we have a disenfranchised, disillusioned, despondent underclass that are not being represented by that political system. So voting for it is tacit complicity with that system, and that's not something I'm offering up.
Now, I'll just give you my commentary on that. In many ways, I do agree with what he's saying. I certainly accept many of the points he's made there. But again, it's a very, like, he's not mounting an argument of any kind. He's just saying this is all no good. But when he does come to mount an argument, what you'll find is that he immediately, without any reflection, assumes that a socialist, egalitarian society with massive wealth redistribution and heavy taxation will be the solution. And that, my friends, has been tried many times. Anyway, I will continue with that as we go forwards.
You change it then.
I'm trying to.
Well, why don't you start by voting?
I don't think it works. People have voted already, and that's what's created the current paradigm.
When did you last vote?
Never.
You've never, ever voted?
No. Do you think that's really bad?
So you struck an attitude, what, before the age of 18?
Well, I was busy being a drug addict at that point because I come from the kind of social conditions that are exacerbated by an indifferent system that really just administrates for large corporations and ignores the population that it was voted in to serve.
You're blaming the political class of the fact you had a drug problem?
No. I'm saying I was part of a social and economic class that is underserved by the current political system, and drug addiction is one of the problems it creates when you have huge, underserved, impoverished populations. People get drug problems and also don't feel like they want to engage with the current political system because they see that it doesn't work for them. They see that it makes no difference. They see that they're not served.
Well, of course it doesn't work for them if they don't bother to vote.
Jeremy, my darling, I'm not saying that the apathy doesn't come from us, the people. The apathy comes from the politicians. They are apathetic to our needs. They're only interested in servicing the needs of corporations. Look at what... Ain't the Tories going to court and to taking the EU to court because they're trying to curtail bank bonuses? Is that what's happening at the moment in our country? It is, isn't it?
Yeah, there is.
So, am I going to tune in for that?
You don't believe in democracy. No, you want a revolution, don't you?
The planet is being destroyed. We are creating an underclass. We are exploiting poor people all over the world. And the genuine, legitimate problems of the people are not being addressed by our political class.
All of those.
Now, again, I just emphasise that he is actually highlighting again and again the key talking points of the green left. The planet is being destroyed. That's appealing to the green environmentalists. Then the underclass and the need to adjust economic disparity is, again, just classic socialist rhetoric. There is actually nothing really revolutionary in what Russell Brand is saying. On the other hand, I must say there are things I like about Russell Brand, which is that he's a young guy who has the vibe, has the ear of the people, right, of his generation, who's passionate and is willing to kind of penetrate through the sludge of the establishment and does it effectively, right? But then, unfortunately, he's just bringing up the same old talking points. And this makes me question it. This makes me question how genuine the man really is. I mean, the movement, an awakening that is going on the planet today, is not about socialist wealth redistribution. Those memes have been around a long time. Those people still exist, right? And Russell Brand has been talking to Alex Jones, he's been talking to libertarians. He knows about libertarian thinking. Don't you worry. He knows about it. He's not advocating it. He's not even mentioning it. Now, some people would say, well, it's just he's naive. I don't think so. I don't think it's that. I think that that he's on a program of some kind. He's got an agenda. I don't know. Time will tell. But I'm going to continue playing a little more because I want to actually get to the key point here where he articulates what I consider to be the philosophy that leads to mass murder and really the worst kind of outcomes of a collectivist solution to society's problems. With Truth News Radio Australia, we'll be right back after this break. Don't go away. Thank you. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, I'm playing you the Paxman brand interview. Trying to kind of probe into it, looking at it as a a mirror into some of the misconceptions that are dominant now about how we deal with the situation that the world is in. It's very important to engage, and we see Russell Brand, an entertainer, a comedian, engaging with these questions, and we want to applaud that. But then we see the man possibly going down a path which is catastrophic. And I know that Russell Brand will be appealing to a lot of people who are not political. A lot of the people who turn up to his events probably have no political thoughts in their mind at all. He's going to be the first person to inject some political ideology into them. He's got these very vulnerable, fertile kind of, soil that he's dealing with, these guinea pigs that he's dealing with, and he's indoctrinating them into a crude form of collectivism. That is my opinion. Of course, you may think I'm completely wrong on that. And if you do, please get in touch with me and I'll have you on the show and we can debate it. Anyway, let me just continue here with the interview with Jeremy Paxman and Russell Brand.
Those things may be true.
They are true.
But you took... I wouldn't argue with you about many of them.
Well, how come I feel so cross with you? It can't just be because of that beard. It's gorgeous.
It's possibly because...
And if the Daily Mail don't want it, I do. I'm against them. Grow it longer. Tangle it into your armpit hair.
You are a very trivial man.
What, do you think I am trivial?
Yes.
A minute ago, you were having a go at me because I want a revolution. Now
no,
I'm trivial.
I'm asking, no,
I'm
but,
bouncing
but
about
I'm not having
place.
A go at you because you want a revolution. Many Good. People want a revolution, but I'm asking you what it will be like.
Well, I think what it won't be like is a huge disparity between rich and poor, where 300 Americans have the same amount of wealth as the 85 million poorest Americans, where there is an exploited and underserved underclass that are being continually ignored, where welfare is slashed while Cameron and Osborne go to court to defend the rights of bankers to continue receiving their bonuses. That's all I'm saying.
Now, let me just contrast what Russell Brand has said with what the people I respect who talk about these same phenomena would say. It's rather than saying, oh, isn't it terrible that these people have a lot and these people don't have very much, let's fix that. It's like, well, no, let's fix the situation where you've got crony capitalists in bed with government controlling the system and monopolising everything and strangling the free market and basically creating corporatist, statist socialism, which enshrines the oligarchy and keeps most people at a low level of brainwashed, drugged compliance. And I would throw into that the critique of the way in which the scientific establishment has been corrupted, the way in which the medical establishment has been corrupted, the way in which our schools have been corrupted, all to program people into accepting the life of servitude. I would be focusing on the enslavement and brainwashing rather than simply talking about, well, these people over here have lots of clams and these people over here don't have any. You know, these people are rich, these people are poor. That's only just one way of looking at it, and it's not very really helpful. Because, you know, a lot of people who are rich because they've worked really hard. Not all people who are rich because they're bad people. A lot of people who are rich are. But a lot of people who've done well for themselves have done well for themselves through hard work. And unfortunately, the rhetoric that that Russell Brand is using is often used in revolutions where it just strips everything away from anyone who's ever achieved anything. It's a tall poppy syndrome. It creates a dictatorship of the mediocrity. It's totalitarianism, unfortunately. And Russell Brand is smart enough to know that. Anyway, continuing with the interview.
scheme?
That's all I'm asking. What's the scheme? You talk vaguely about revolution. What is it?
I think a socialist egalitarian system based on the massive redistribution of wealth, heavy taxation of corporations and massive responsibility for energy companies and any company that's exploiting the environment. I think they should be... I think the very concept of profit should be hugely reduced. David Cameron says profit isn't a dirty word. I say profit is a filthy word, because wherever there is profit, there is also deficit. And then...
OK, this is where I completely fell off the brand bandwagon. The very concept of profit is a filthy word. I mean... Goodness me. I mean, this guy, I have to say, is not in any way... I don't know, it's really disturbing, folks, I have to say. And I don't know quite what's going on here. I don't know whether this has actually been set up. I mean, there are a lot of forces at work. People with a lot of money working behind the scenes to bring about a global socialist regime with massive redistribution of wealth and an oligarchy that retains power in a kind of a feudal sense. And the rhetoric that Russell Brand is spouting is ideal for sparking the sort of revolution that would lead to that oligarchical collectivism, as George Orwell described it. Then again, you know, maybe I'm seeing too much into this, maybe I'm overthinking it. You know, maybe it's just as he says, maybe Russell Brand is just this guy that's a comedian and we shouldn't think too much about it. In that case, what does it even matter? Why are we even talking about it? But again, people are talking about it. Many people around the world are going to his events. And I believe that they're being seeded with this very dubious political ideology, this very dangerous, malignant political ideology. And that's why I'm here to actually provide an antidote to it. But the antidote actually requires rigorous thought. It requires more than just having a who cares kind of attitude, I'm just having a lark kind of attitude. You've got to think through what your propositions are. You have to consider the consequences, and you've got to be willing to look at history. I mean, look at what happened when the massive redistribution happened in Cambodia. Look at what happened in Stalinist Russia. Look at what happened in China. Some people would say, well, look at Cuba. Cuba's okay. Well, Cuba's a very small country. I'm not sure that Cuba is okay either. Certainly not as bad as some of these larger countries. But then Cuba didn't embrace that form of massive engineered social engineering for wealth redistribution. Some of the smaller countries that have embraced a type of socialism have actually worked out better. And one might consider Gaddafi's Libya an example of that. Socialism, when it's done on a small scale with a dictator who's reasonably benevolent, maybe not perfectly benevolent, but reasonably well-intentioned, where there is wealth, that can actually work. But, you know, we find that those regimes are the ones that, oddly, that they get targeted by the West. They get targeted by the establishment oligarchies much more savagely than the large socially engineered, you know, classic communist socialist systems such as what we saw in Russia, China. What is clear is that there is an oligarchy, And I do hope that Russell Brand is actually really working for freedom. But when I hear this rhetoric that he uses, I certainly have my doubts. With Truth News Radio Australia, we'll be back with some more news and analysis after the break. Don't go away. You with Truth News Radio, and I've been going through here the interview with Russell Brand on the BBC and giving you some of my critique and analysis of that. I want to play to you a little from Stefan Molyneux now, who's put a video up titled An Open Letter to Russell Brand, and I've just lined it up here to a point where I think he gets to the key issues, and I think Mr. Molyneux has really nailed it very well, so I'll let him speak for himself. Here we go, Stephen Molyneux on Russell Brand.
The temptation that I would invite you to look at is the temptation to believe that more power is going to solve the problem of great power. There is always this belief that if we just hit the gas a little more, that if we just take more power and give more power to control others into the hands of some angelic, godlike, unselfish, beautiful people, that we can make the world a paradise. But I think that history, facts, and experience will show, if you think about it in a particular way, that's just not true. What is true, for instance, is that America has spent $4 to $5 trillion over the past 5 years on the welfare state, and the poor are in a worse place. America has tried to get the poor into houses with a variety of beneficial schemes, which causes a massive housing crush. More power in the state won't work. More power to redistribute, more power to tax, more power to control, more power to fence in and box in all of the special interests that you see using the government to slowly club the poor into a proletariat bloody mass. More power will only attract more sociopaths. More power will only attract more evil. More taxation will only attract more exploiters. More control will only attract more controllers. The U.S. in the last 5 years has spent more money on the poor that probably existed for the first 10,000 years of human history. And the poor are worse off than they were before. Since the 1960s, your dream of tax the rich and control the corporations and give the money to the poor has been tried repeatedly, extravagantly, violently, viciously, bottomlessly. And it doesn't work. The nature of what you called for, the redistribution of income, which is a completely understandable impulse. This man, his plate is so full of food he can't possibly finish it for five generations. This man is rail thin and starving and eating a constant buffet of his own fingernails. The desire to take a little bit of food or money or power from this man's plate and give it to this man is almost overwhelming, and it is the greatest temptation and the greatest pit to fall into when you really want to change the world. The world does not suffer from a deficiency of power, my friend. The world does not suffer from a deficiency of income redistribution. In America, those who are on the receiving end of government handouts currently outnumber those who are paying taxes, including those who are government workers, who you could argue is kind of in both camps. This is not because there hasn't been enough money. It's not because there hasn't been enough power. The dream of ending poverty has been pursued over the past 40 or 50 years with more resources than those who started the war on poverty under LBJ could have possibly dreamed of. The amount of wealth that has run through the government with the attempt and goal of trying to save the poor is more wealth than has been dreamt of by anyone who has ever wanted to help the poor. And the poor are worse off after all of that. You're not quite far enough. I say this with all humility and with all respect. I mean, again, your passion and your eloquence and the fiery dedication of your drive for equality and egalitarianism, I find absolutely admirable. I actually had a full head of hair before watching the interview. But you're not going far enough.
Okay, well, that's probably enough for you to get the sense of where Stefan Molyneux is coming from. And indeed, I can't really fault anything he said there. Although I think that it's not just a problem of the approach not working. The approach does work in a way. The approach that that Russell Brand is advocating works in a particular way. And it actually works to enslave. It is just another formula for enslavement. And so it's something that we should be very, very wary of. It's actually one of the worst possible outcomes. We've got a lot of problems now. But you go down that path, and some would say, well, we're all being steered down that path. Some would say that this is all part of a deliberate plan to steer us down that path. And demagogues like Russell Brand have actually been sent forth to be the Pied Pipers of Doom, taking us down this road. I don't know. But I will continue to tell it like it is from my point of view. And I think that's really all one can do in such a situation. I'd like to draw your attention now to another recent video by Stefan Molyneux, which is actually a debate between Stefan and Peter Joseph, the founder of the Zeitgeist movement. And what I found is interesting is a lot of the same themes, the same memes, the same debate as we saw there between Paxman and Russell Brand coming up again with Stefan Molyneux and his guest Peter Joseph. Now, of course, I've spoken a lot about the Zeitgeist movement on this show, and as everyone knows, I'm certainly not a fan. And I have to say, after watching Peter Joseph speaking to Stefan Molyneux, I'm even less impressed with the Zeitgeist movement. I find, again, that there is this tendency to pay lip service to very, very naive, very oversimplified arguments about social equality, social inequality, and how we're going to sort of fix things so that we're going to make everyone happy. And again, it just appears to be appealing to a kind of a childlike level in the human psyche. And again, you know, the Zeitgeist movement was absolutely huge. It had massive success. And I wonder why. Well, I think it's partly because it does appeal to people on this very childlike level. Let me play to you a little clip here of Peter Joseph talking to Stefan Molyneux. This is about halfway through their conversation, and he's talking here about social inequality.
Social inequality is one of the most insidious attributes in the world today with respect to public health. It manifests in absolute form, which is, say, poverty, and it manifests in relative form, which is basically development of psychosocial stress. If you're familiar with the work of Gabor Mate, he talks about this type of idea at length as well. So long story short, structural violence is in fact and unequivocally the leading cause of death on the planet Earth. In a 1976 study, I believe it was called the Empirical Table of Structural Violence, I can't remember the authors, but anyone can punch this up, it was found that 18 million deaths occur each year because of essentially inequality and structural policy based around or that generates inequality. And guess what the root of this inequality is? The state cannot be held as some root catalyst of inequality or the other fallacious external terms such as crony capitalism, which again harp upon the first fallacy I put forward, because the same fundamental principles exist. You can't differentiate capitalism from crony capitalism. It comes from the very root source of our socioeconomic principles, the market itself. It is an explicit and direct consequence of the gaming of competition and advantage. It's a mathematical inevitability, and you can see this by simply comparing different countries based on their rates of homicide, rates of violence, rates of death based on poverty, associated to the level of inequality that's in their country. And if you extrapolate from 1976, there have been about, 600 million people that have died due to poverty and inequality in all of its forms, absolute and relative. And that isn't even accounting for the gross increase in inequality we've seen globally as well. So with all due respect...
Sorry, but what is the definition of structural violence?
Structural violence is a type of violence that is imposed – well, it depends on who you ask because it's become more of a general term. But in its traditional state, it took only into consideration the effects of social inequality. But today you'll find other researchers describing the structural violence of, you know, any type of institution that has a causal link. For example, a type of structural violence linked to – well, I think poverty is the easiest one because it sprawls out in so many different ways. A mother, for example. I know, for example, you talk about children a lot. You talk about how the root of our values and the such come from parenting, how important that is. And I absolutely agree. But what isn't being counted is the fact that all parents are subject to an enormous amount of pressure. If a parent first of all, a divorce is – leading cause of divorce is financial. I think we all know that. And divorce has had a tremendous psychological effect on children. There's a whole spectrum of these things. But I often use the example of a woman. She's a single mother. She gets fired from her job. It wasn't her fault she was fired. They just had to downsize for whatever purpose, basic market correction. She's unable to take care of her child. That child can't afford health care. She can't afford to have a babysitter. She deals with whatever she can, and she's loosely been able to take care of this child because of the pressures around her. She doesn't have the means to do so. One day, the child stumbles and has some type of accident that...
Okay, I'll just leave it there. I don't really have time to go into that in any more depth. The point there that I believe Peter Joseph is making about this structural violence is that somehow the system is set up this way. The social inequity creates violence, which is intrinsic to it, and he's saying it's intrinsic to the system. Therefore, he's saying the whole system is no good. It's intrinsically bad, and it can't be fixed simply by addressing problems within it. But there is something extremely simplistic in the way he phrases that, and the way he talks about what is essentially just struggle and hardship. And it's like he's saying, well, we have to remove struggle and hardship from people's lives completely, so that that child never stumbled and fell. And that's where Zeitgeist and socialism have a lot in common, is that they sort of want to have these massive solutions to all the problems, but then those massive solutions have to have implementations which are themselves a form of tyranny. Anyway, we're out of time. It has been great talking to you today. I'll be back next week. You've been listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Have a great week.